Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Coming up later this morning, we'll continue our expanded edition of our 30 Issues election series for this week. Issue 23, Facing Whiteness. And today we'll have a call-in for those of you who are multiracial, including part white. If we've learned one thing from this series so far, I think it's that white people don't generally think about their whiteness very much. But that's probably different if you're only part white. So later in the show, we'll have a call-in for multiracial people who are part white on how you relate to your whiteness. But we begin today in Connecticut, where a Superior Court judge has issued a scathing decision in a case that took on the state's public schools, the basic fitness of the state's public schools to educate the kids in Connecticut. The judge read the entire decision out loud. It took him 3 hours. Here's the central 9 seconds.
Beyond a reasonable doubt, Connecticut is defaulting on its constitutional duty to provide adequate public school opportunities.
The judge, Thomas McCousher, decried the entire education system in the state, saying Connecticut schools denied some children, mostly poor children of color, their constitutional right to an adequate education. He used words like dysfunctional, irrational, befuddled. He ordered state lawmakers to come up with a plan to rethink and reform practically everything within 180 days. He expressed dismay at the way schools are funded, the way teachers are evaluated and paid, and the overall quality of the education. And New Yorkers, if this sounds familiar, yes, there was a similar court ruling about New York State failing to provide a sound basic education about 10 years ago that New York is still struggling to implement. So, folks in Connecticut, here you go. And here with me now to give us some context on this momentous decision, and maybe we'll also throw in the governor's new decree that Metro North cars in Connecticut will have bar cars, Metro North trains, is John Dankosky, the news director and host of the show Where We Live at WNPR in Hartford. Hi, John. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to talk to you once again, Brian.
And Connecticut listeners, our phones are open at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. John, I guess if we could sum this up for our listeners without any jargon, the crux of the judge's decision is your schools are utterly failing kids in poverty. You're doing a horrible job, and nothing about the way the school system is organized makes any sense. Fix it. Did I get that pretty much right?
Well, and that's it. And one of the things that's so alarming and shocking about this is that the judge's ruling isn't really saying fix the poorest public schools. And it's not really saying fix the achievement gap. What it's saying is fix Connecticut, fix the way we work, because the way the state is set up, and all of our New England states are, is this town by town local government. There's an awful lot of local control that people prize and hold dear. And what that means is that one suburban town might raise a whole bunch of property taxes from the local residents and build really, really great schools, some of the best schools in the world. As a matter of fact, Connecticut's overall education is really great because the top achieving students achieve so very, very well. But in the cities, these places which are land poor, very small cities with an awful lot of non-taxable land, an awful high minority population. They've always struggled for years, Bridgeport and Hartford. And what the judge is saying is we have to find an entirely new way of funding this system, of educating these kids, of towns working together, of paying the teachers. And to say that we're going to do it in 180 days after a couple hundred years of operating like this doesn't seem to many people to be too terribly realistic. It certainly is scary, I'll tell you that.
Right. And here's another 11 seconds of the judge reading his decision from the bench that relates to exactly what you were just describing.
The state would rather be a little less directly responsible. It points to a tradition of local control that it almost never brings up except to get itself out of a jam.
I'm going to read those words again. The state would rather be a little less directly responsible. The state. It points to a tradition of local control that it almost never brings up except to get itself out of a jam. And, John, really, this goes so far beyond Connecticut. This is a national issue. We've talked about it on the show as a national issue that really nobody hardly ever makes any progress on, which is that public education all across the country, not in New York City, by the way, which is one of the big exceptions, but in the rest of New York State as well, and in New Jersey and in most of the country, local public school systems are funded primarily through the local property tax. And so we wind up with the system that the judge is talking about in Connecticut, where if you live in an affluent district where the homes are worth a lot and you pay a lot of property tax, then the schools have a ton of money relative to the poor districts in the state. And it's a savage inequity, to quote the title of an old book on education. And the only way that it gets evened out, and this is a battle state by state by state, is if the state government funds education so much to even out those inequities that it takes care of it. So I realize I'm going on, but I'm really struck by this decision in the sense that it forces the country, if anybody outside of Connecticut covers the story, to face this very fundamental issue of how we fund schools and why that's related to their inequities.
Well, and here's the other thing that it really does point out is that those town lines, which have been drawn in some cases hundreds of years ago, those are really important lines, not just because of, you know, a really good school district on one side, Brian, and a really poor school district on another side. But it's because over the course of the last many decades, there's been very implicit segregation of these communities, red lines drawn so that people of color aren't going to live in some neighborhoods and are going to live in other neighborhoods. And so when I say that the judge's ruling here draws into question almost everything about the way our state works, it really is true. We have to think about why town lines are drawn the way they're drawn, why certain neighborhoods only tend to have people who are below a certain economic threshold and other neighborhoods only tend to have people who are above another. We've had other court rulings in the past which have taken a very long time. The Schiff versus O'Neill case was about, in some cases, this same issue, but it ended up being about black kids and white kids, Hispanic kids and white kids being able to be educated next to one another. But it's taken a very long time to try to figure out a system that allows for that, that both the suburbs with an awful lot of political clout in Hartford and the cities with relatively little political clout in Hartford are able to come to some agreements with. And so now we're being forced to address this issue after all these years of maybe making bad decisions.
So is the judge, in effect, ordering the state to revamp how education is funded and make it more of a, you know, collect taxes at the state level and then distribute them equitably to school districts around the state? Or is it something less than that?
Well, one thing that has been talked about an awful lot in some school districts and some regions of the state have made some inroads into this is really talking about the idea of regionalization, regional school districts, taking a couple towns together and saying we're going to have a school district that takes in a few higher performing suburbs and a few maybe inner ring suburbs and urban areas that haven't traditionally performed so well and funding them like true regional school districts. It's never really been tried in full in Connecticut. Regionalism is sometimes a very dirty word at the state capitol because an awful lot of political clout is held by suburban school districts who are seen to, in their minds, be hurt the most by something like this. The regionalization idea, Brian, also comes at the same time where cities like Hartford are facing, beyond the educational problems, bankruptcy, potentially. Hartford is broke right now. Brand new mayor is trying to deal with that issue, and he's asking towns and cities around Hartford that benefit from an awful lot of the services that the city has to provide to the region for more and more help. So I think that's one of the things that's going to come out of this is not so much how the state's going to do it from the top, but also how the towns and cities are going to organize themselves better to provide this education that the kids need.
And people elsewhere in the region can certainly relate to that, to this, and the dualities that you're describing in some particular instances. How about those of you on Long Island, where we're doing a live broadcast, by the way, on Monday night at Adelphi. I hope you'll join us for that, 6 o'clock Monday at Adelphi, but Garden City schools versus Hempstead schools on Long Island, Bronxville and Yonkers in Westchester, Newark and Montclair in New Jersey. Listeners in Connecticut, we want your calls on this. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So how's the governor reacted?
Well, the governor has been a little cagey so far about whether or not he believes the state is going to appeal this ruling. Understand that Governor Malloy, this case has been going on for such a long time, Brian, that he was one of the original plaintiffs when he was mayor of the city of Stamford. So this has been quite a long time in the making. Many of the big city mayors and small town mayors got behind this years and years ago. So he's a little in conflict because the state that he runs is being asked to remediate a problem that he saw as a problem many, many years ago. So I think he has, by and large, sided with a lot of what's in the judge's ruling. At the same time, it is a very, very broad ruling. As you said, 90 pages read from the bench. I think I read a quote this morning that said, you know, if it was a five-page ruling, it might be a lot easier to tell you right now whether or not I think the state should appeal. But a 90-page ruling is something we're going to take some time on. And, of course, it's really up to the Democratic Attorney General of the state, George Jepson, to make that call about whether or not the state's going to appeal.
I guess so. By the way, sorry, I got the start time of our Adelphi event wrong. It's 7 o'clock next Monday night, so hope to see many of you in Nassau or even come in from Suffolk to our pre-election event at Adelphi University next Monday night at 7 o'clock. Right now we're talking to John Dankosky from WNPR in Hartford. He's the news director and host of the show Where We Live, as we discuss this landmark court ruling in the state that said basically everything is wrong with the public education system and the way it's organized and funded, as you've been hearing. And let's take a call from Barbara in Riverside, Connecticut. Barbara, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Brian. And John, I just listened to your Where We Live. So I would just like to say that sadly, but realistically, this is not only about citizens making choices about the educational decisions to help all students achieve, but it's also about financial and investment decisions of citizens as they choose where to move and put their money on their homes. So I live in Riverside, which is part of Greenwich, and I actually would favor regionalization because we're right next to Stamford, and I never understood why somebody should have the lesser education because they're a mile away. But people who live in Greenwich and those kinds of areas come to Greenwich and pay an inordinate amount of money for their homes because partially there are good schools here. And if you were to change that, it would be a financial change for them. It would have to be phased in some way.
John?
Well, you make such a good point. I think one thing that a lot of people would say to that is there a way for Connecticut to achieve some sort of regional school districts that would allow the students of Greenwich to actually still perform at this very, very high level they have? I mean, we see numbers of, you know, in Fairfield, Connecticut, 94% of students graduating from high school on time. That's a fairly rich town right next to Bridgeport, where the graduation rate is about 63%. As I said off the top, it's not just that the poorest students in Connecticut perform so poorly, but it's that the students in places like Greenwich perform so very, very well. And overall, on average, the Connecticut student does very, very well. So could we arrange a school system that allows a very high-quality education and also addresses something that earlier court ruling Sheff versus O'Neill does, which is to say maybe there's something inherently good about having more students of color study next to more students who have maybe never met anybody from an urban district. Maybe there's something inherently good about that system that we could institute. I don't see how, in the Connecticut that I've covered for almost 25 years, that's going to be politically feasible anytime soon, but I think that the judge's ruling at least gives us a chance to have a conversation about whether now's the time to do that.
Barbara, thank you very much. And here's John in Wilton, who I think is going to push back on the judge's decision and say that this threatens what's good about Connecticut schools. John, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hi, here to push back. So, you know, Wilton is an excellent school system. Norwalk has problems. The state has reduced state contributions to Wilton to zero, huge contributions to Norwalk. The funding is almost equal. Wilton was had programs in the past to pay to bus any Norwalk kid who wanted to come to Wilton. The Norwalk kids were not interested. I think we have to confront and face that there's certain communities that the people are interested in education, they're willing to invest in education, the kids are committed to education, and there are communities where the claim that the education is failing because they're being deprived. Norwalk has, you know, huge amount of money, as does Bridgeport. And I think we have to be willing to confront that there are other reasons why they're failing and destroying a school like Wilton in order, you know, to spite Norwalk. I don't think that's going to solve the problem.
Well, John, let me just ask you real quick. What do you think that the disconnect is? I mean, why do you think that the district where the people aren't doing quite as well in school, what do you think is at the root of that? If the money's the same,
I think there are a lot of reasons that you're not allowed to discuss. That's what I think.
You're trying to make a racial case that some
I'm trying to make
ethnic
a,
groups
say,
are not interested in education.
Use, but there are, you know, how many, you know, people who teach in the New York City school system. You know what they confront in the classroom.
I don't think that they confront the fact that any group, by virtue of their race or ethnicity, is not interested in the successful education of their children. No. But, John, let me move it a square or two away from John's racial and ethnic center there and take a bit of maybe grain of something meaningful out of that, which is that so much of the problems of disparate educational outcomes are related to poverty, and that there have been attempts to equalize that by throwing a lot of money at it that aren't always successful. So it's certainly not the whole answer.
Well, I think in that, John is absolutely right. The fact is that spending per student in places like Bridgeport or Norwalk or Hartford is very, very high. The outcomes aren't the same, but it does have to do with a whole series of issues. And once again, it gets back to the things that we have a hard time talking about and actually solving, like systemic poverty in our urban areas. That's something that the judge seems to be trying to get at, but I don't know that we have any court remedy for that, because if we did, America would, I think, be a much better place with a lot less poverty. We see these problems in the urban areas of Connecticut, just like we see them in other places. One difference in Connecticut is we have small cities that don't have enormous population bases. They're small in physical size. There's not a lot of taxable land. It's very, very hard to build up the kind of wealth inside some of the urban areas of small to mid-sized cities like Hartford and Bridgeport that you're able to build up in a New York City or a Boston or other more thriving urban areas. And that's something that's just really hard to confront. We've got a very high minority population in Hartford, including a lot of people who don't speak English as their primary language. There are educational accommodations that need to be made in order to get kids actually educated at the right level because of those challenges. And those challenges are real. And I guess a question back to John and Wilton or other folks is whether or not the system's failing the kids, whether or not it has something to do with parents failing the kids, teachers. What the judge seems to be concerned about here, and many other people in Connecticut seem to be concerned about, is what do we do to help the kids who, for whatever reason, are put into this situation beyond their control and aren't getting the types of educations that they need to be able to succeed and move into a better circumstance in their lives.
There is something that a lot of teachers would say, I think, educators of all kinds, that might echo what the police chief of Dallas said after the police shootings there, when he said, they put on the police so much of society's problems. You know, if there's poverty, we leave it to the police to solve it. If kids aren't getting educated, we leave it to the police to solve it, et cetera. A lot of teachers will turn around and say, if there's poverty, we leave it to the kids to solve it. If there's, you know, other kinds of inequities, we leave it to the, to the schools to solve it. And they certainly feel put upon in that respect.
Well, it gets to actually one of my bugaboos. I was thinking about this as you were just saying that, Brian, is that so many districts are now in charge, or they feel as though they need to be in charge, of providing the only square meal that some of these kids are going to get. Over the summertime, urban school districts have had to take on very extensive programs to feed kids who don't get good meals during the summertime because they're not in school. Now, a question I've asked consistently in Connecticut, and I'm sure you and others around the country have asked this too, is the public school system the best place to get kids a square meal? And increasingly people are saying, yeah, because there's no other service that does it. And that really, you bring up a very, very good point. If we put so much of the weight on certain services which cost money, whether it's teachers, whether it's police, and say, you've got to solve the problem on your own, no wonder there's going to be problems, whether it's problems in the classroom with discipline or whether there's problems with the teacher contract or whether there's the problems with police versus people on the street relationships. When you put that much weight of the crushing problem of poverty on a few professional classes, it is going to not work out well.
Virginia in Darien, you're on WNYC. Hi, Virginia.
Hi, good morning. We moved to Darien specifically for the schools there, and I still have a daughter in middle school. And obviously, as a mother, I would worry if the quality of my child's school would deteriorate because of less funding. But on the other hand, I'm also an immigration attorney, and I work with a lot of underprivileged kids in Stamford and Bridgeport. So I understand very well the other side of the issue. And I honestly don't think that there would be a lot of I think that the schools in the rich towns would still be good, mainly because of parents' organizations. They donate money to train teachers and so forth. And also, I think the regional idea is a really good idea because the towns, at least along the coast of Connecticut, they're alternating rich town, poor town. We think of it a lot around here as the service town. So you have Greenwich, which is a rich town. Then you have Stamford, which is a service town. Then you have Darien, rich. Then you have Norwalk. So they alternate. So I think that the rich towns can support the surrounding poor towns because those schools are going to cost more, and they're going to, and those kids are the ones that need the resources more. I mean, a student like my daughter with, parents who have multiple degrees are going to make sure that their kids are studying and doing well in school, no matter what school they're in. Whereas a kid who's in Bridgeport is going to need extra help, whether it's food, whether it's better teachers, higher paid teachers, they need it. So I think regional education would be a really good idea.
So do you think that this judge's decision will help bring that about, Virginia? Have you thought about it to that degree?
I hope so. I mean, the kids in these marginalized neighborhoods, they really, really need it. They need the education. And you know, the children are the future of the state. So, you know, the better off they are early in life, the better off the state will be later. So they really, really need it.
Thank you very much. John, go ahead.
And I'll just say, Brian, and thank you very much for the call on that, because, you know, our state is also facing enormous economic problems having to do with our budget, potentially billions of dollars in debt moving forward. It's very, very hard to come out of this recession for Connecticut, coming out much more slowly. We're hearing constantly that the employers in Connecticut want to keep a young, talented workforce here. They don't want them to go other places. And one of the things I think this ruling and this suit at first just got at when it asked these questions years ago is, are we going to educate our students, all of our students, in a way that we actually provide a workforce for a Connecticut that we want to see in the future. And we seem to be seeing both with the education numbers that are coming out as far as rich schools versus poor schools in performance, and also in the economic performance of the state, that we're just not doing it. We're not aligning the students and their education with the workforce that we actually need. So I think she's absolutely right. This is going to make a stronger Connecticut if we're able to in some way solve this problem. I don't know the answer, but in some way solve this problem in the next couple of years.
I'm still thinking about the previous caller, John, and some of the things that he said and concerns that he raised that may speak for a lot of people in Connecticut, for better or worse. And one is that implementing this ruling to the benefit of poor districts, he said it'll hurt, or we might have said destroy, the schools in a successful district like Wilton. Do you think that that would be a common reaction in the more affluent, more successful schools, that they are threatened in some way by this decision, not just that poor districts might be helped?
I think one of the things that we've always tried to figure out as we cover our state is how many of Virginia's neighbors in Darien, or how many of John's neighbors in Wilton, would say that they want to have a school system that brings in kids from the surrounding districts. I don't know the numbers on that, Brian. All I know is that politically over the years, we've seemed to reject the notion. And that comes from the legislators who are elected, and that comes from an awful lot of people that I talk to in many of these districts. And to the earlier points that were made, folks have spent an awful lot of money to get their kids into a really good school with a really nice house in a really good district, and they don't want to be told that they're not going to have that thing in the future that they've paid for. And I do truthfully understand that sentiment, but I do hear it a lot. So the question is there political will amongst enough rich towns to say, we want to try something different? I truly don't know if it's there. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much it would change the schools at the end of the day.
And I'm looking now at a Wall Street Journal headline that says, school ruling alarms Connecticut suburbs. So that's an indication of some of the reaction. As we talk about,
that's one way to put it, yeah.
For another few minutes, this court ruling in Connecticut that basically says the whole school funding system needs to be overhauled in order to provide a constitutional adequate education for all of the children of Connecticut. John Dankosky, host of the program Next on WNPR in Hartford, is my guest. And let's get at least one more call in here, and it's from Melanie in the New Haven area. Hi, Melanie. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. My children grew up in Woodbridge, Connecticut, and Orange, Connecticut, which had excellent school systems, or at least very good. But we've worked in places like Waterbury and New Haven, which have very poor school districts, and it's not just a question of funding. And yet both Waterbury and New Haven have very lousy snow plowing, or, you know, whatever it is, the city services are poor. Yet we benefit so much. A lot of the Yale faculty live in Woodbridge and Orange and go into New Haven every day. But we choose these districts for our children precisely because of the excellent schools. And I have to say that, you know, my children are now out of the school system, so perhaps it's easier for me to say. But I have always felt very uncomfortable about the fact that we benefit from these bigger cities, and yet we live in lovely little rural Connecticut towns. And I don't know if this particular judge's ruling is the right way to go, but I'm so pleased it's drawn attention yet again, that's not the first time, yet again to an issue that absolutely needs to be addressed. It is, it's almost like a separate but not equal system. And I was also on the Woodbridge Board of Finance a while ago, and I understand the opposition. But for goodness sake, we meant to be a blue state. We meant to be objective and open-minded. And yet I know many of my neighbors would not agree with me. And I hope that I would have felt this way also when my children were in school. I mean, I did feel this way, but I know that it's easier for me to say now.
Melanie, thank you for your openness. I appreciate your call. John, we're just about out of time for this today. What happens next? Is the state legislature going to have this huge ball of objection by the judge thrown in its court without a blueprint for how to fix it? He said fix it, and you have 180 days. He didn't say how, right?
Well, he didn't say specifically how, although he did say an awful lot of things and give some advice. 180 days is a very short period of time that puts us into the middle of the state legislative session. I'm going to guess that there is an appeal on this and there's an extension on this of some sort. It really forces the legislature to come back this winter, Brian, and say, what are we going to do about property tax reform? Are we going to take a look at regionalization? What do we have as a funding model for the 30 poorest school districts? What do we have as a funding model for the richest school districts? How do we address this? And I will say once again, we're doing this at a time when the state is facing a massive budget deficit that has forced cutting of other important services. This maybe is the worst possible time to take on the notion of completely overhauling the education system. But you know what? If not now, when are you going to do it?
And I can tell you that in New York's experience, where there was a similar ruling about 10 years ago, the plaintiffs have had to go back to court several times over the last decade and get the judge to enforce that the state actually keeps up with what it was mandated to change to create state constitutional equity. So
yeah, same thing happened in that Sheff versus O'Neill case. So I don't think that this is the last time that this ends up back in court or that this does get fixed in 180 days. But as the last caller said, boy, it's probably pretty good we're having this conversation. It may be in some people's minds 200 years overdue.
And not the last time we talk about this or other. Oh, I didn't ask you about the bar cars. Now, wait, the bar cars went off Metro North just like 2 years ago. And Governor Malloy himself did something to bring the bar cars back?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how much the governor did to bring them back. I know the governor has been working very hard to get the cars upgraded and get all the cars in here. Well, you know, I've been riding Metro North in the course of this last couple of years since the bar cars went off, Brian. And, you know, you got to buy a beer if you want to at a little kiosk. And now the bar cars are coming back. This is something that's a grand tradition for Connecticut commuters to actually have these places where you can sit and have a little drink on the way. So, I mean, I think a lot of people in Fairfield County certainly are going to say this is a really good thing. Of all the things we can complain about the state, the returning of the bar car might be a good thing.
So this is going to be on the Metro North trains, folks, that go to Connecticut. So if you're going to Irvington and Tarrytown and Croton-on-Hudson on the Hudson line, No, but on the lines that go into Connecticut, there will be bar cars.
That's how we're competing with your state. We're trying to get everyone to ride the bar cars back to Connecticut.
John Dankosky, executive editor of the New England News Collaborative, news director of WNPR Hartford, and host of the program there called Next. John, thanks.
Thanks so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Kelly Goff is back with us next. Stay with us.